Chapter 19. That part I did not relish at all. I told him I was ready to hear anything that he had to say, depending that he would say nothing unworthy of himself, or unfit for me to hear. Upon this, he told me his proposal was this, that I would marry him, though he had not yet obtained the divorce from the whore his wife. And to satisfy me that he meant honorably, he would promise not to desire me to live with him, or go to bed with him till the divorce was obtained. My heart said yes to this offer at first word, but it was necessary to play the hypocrite a little more with him, so I seemed to decline the motion with some warmth, and besides a little condemning the thing as unfair, told him that such a proposal could be of no signification, but to entangle us both in great difficulties. For if he should not at last obtain the divorce, yet we could not dissolve the marriage, neither could we proceed in it. So that if he was disappointed in the divorce, I left him to consider what a condition we should both be in. In short, I carried on the argument against this so far, that I convinced him it was not a proposal that had any sense in it. Well, then he went from it to another, and that was, that I would sign and seal a contract with him, conditioning to marry him as soon as the divorce was obtained, and to be void if he could not obtain it. I told him such a thing was more rational than the other, but as this was the first time that ever I could imagine him weak enough to be in earnest in this affair, I did not use to say yes at first asking, I would consider of it. I played with this lover as an angler does with a trout. I found I had him fast on the hook, so I jested with his new proposal, and put him off. I told him he knew little of me, and bade him inquire about me. I let him also go home with me to my lodging, though I would not ask him to go in, for I told him it was not decent. In short, I ventured to avoid signing a contract of marriage, and the reason why I did it was because the lady, that had invited me so earnestly, to go with her into Lancashire insisted so positively upon it, and promised me such great fortunes, and such fine things there, that I was tempted to go and try. Perhaps, apostrophe said I may mend myself very much, and then I made no scruple in my thoughts of quitting my honest citizen, whom I was not so much in love with as not to leave him for a richer. In a word, I avoided a contract, but told him I would go into the north, that he should know where to write to me by the consequence of the business I had entrusted with him, that I would give him a sufficient pledge of my respect for him, for I would leave almost all I had in the world in his hands, and I would thus far give him my word, that as soon as he had sued out a divorce from his first wife, he would send me an account of it, I would come up to London, and that then we would talk seriously of the matter. It was a base design I went with, that I must confess, though I was invited thither with a design much worse than mine was, as the sequel will discover. Well, I went with my friend, as I called her, into Lancashire. All the way we went she caressed me with the utmost appearance of a sincere, undissembled affection, treated me, except my coach hire, all the way. And her brother brought a gentleman's coach to Warrington to receive us, and we were carried from thence to Liverpool with as much ceremony as I could desire. We were also entertained at a merchant's house in Liverpool 3 or 4 days very handsomely. I forbear to tell his name, because of what followed. Then she told me she would carry me to an uncle's house of hers, where we should be nobly entertained. She did so. Her uncle, as she called him, sent a coach and 4 horses for us, and we were carried near 40 miles I know not whither. We came, however, to a gentleman's seat, where was a numerous family, a large park, extraordinary company indeed, and where she was called cousin. I told her, if she had resolved to bring me into such company as this, she should have let me have prepared myself, and have furnished myself with better clothes. The ladies took notice of that, and told me very genteelly they did not value people in their country so much by their clothes as they did in London, that their cousin had fully informed them of my quality, and that I did not want clothes to set me off. In short, they entertained me, not like what I was, but like what they thought I had been, namely, a widow lady of a great fortune. The first discovery I made here was, that the family were all Roman Catholics, and the cousin whom I called my friend. However, I must say, that nobody in the world could behave better to me, and I had all the civility shown me, that I could have had, if I had been of their opinion. The truth is, I had not so much principle of any kind, as to be nice in point of religion, and I presently learned to speak favorably of the Romish Church. Particularly, I told them I saw little, but the prejudice of education in all the difference, that were among Christians about religion, and if it had so happened, that my father had been a Roman Catholic, I doubted not, but I should have been as well pleased with their religion as my own. This obliged them in the highest degree, and as I was besieged day and night with good company and pleasant discourse, so I had two or three old ladies, that lay at me upon the subject of religion too. I was so complacent, that though I would not completely engage, yet I made no scruple to be present at their mass, and to conform to all their gestures as they showed me the pattern, but I would not come too cheap, so that I only in the main encouraged them to expect that I would turn Roman Catholic, if I was instructed in the Catholic doctrine as they called it, and so the matter rested. I stayed here about 6 weeks, and then my conductor led me back to a country village, about 6 miles from Liverpool, where her brother, as she called him, came to visit me in his own chariot, and in a very good figure, with two footmen in a good livery, and the next thing was to make love to me. As it had happened to me, one would think I could not have been cheated, and indeed I thought so myself, having a safe card at home, which I resolved not to quit, unless I could mend myself very much. However, in all appearance this brother was a match worth my listening to, and the least his estate was valued at was number 1,000 a year, but the sister said it was worth number 1,500 a year, and lay most of it in Ireland. Aye, that was a great fortune, and passed for such, was above being asked, how much my estate was, and my false friend taking it upon a foolish hearsay, had raised it from number 500 to number 5,000, and by the time she came into the country she called it number 15,000. The Irishman, for such I understood him to be, was stark mad at this bait. In short, he courted me, made me presents, and ran in debt like a madman for the expenses of his equipage, and of his courtship. He had, to give him his due, the appearance of an extraordinary fine gentleman. He was tall, well-shaped, and had an extraordinary address, talked as naturally of his park and his stables, of his horses, his gamekeepers, his woods, his tenants, and his servants, as if we had been in the mansion house, and I had seen them all about me. He never so much as asked me about my fortune or estate, but assured me that, when we came to Dublin he would jointure me in number 600 a year good land, and that we could enter into a deed of settlement or contract here for the performance of it. This was such language indeed as I had not been used to, and I was here beaten out of all my measures. I had a she-devil in my bosom, every hour telling me how great her brother lived. One time she would come for my orders, how I would have my coaches painted, and how lined, and another time what clothes my page should wear. In short, my eyes were dazzled. I had now lost my power of saying no, and, to cut the story short, I consented to be married. But to be the more private, we were carried farther into the country, and married by a Romish clergyman, who I was assured would marry us as effectually as a Church of England parson. I cannot say, but I had some reflections in this affair upon the dishonorable forsaking my faithful citizen, who loved me sincerely, and who was endeavoring to quit himself of a scandalous whore by whom he had been indeed barbarously used, and promised himself infinite happiness in his new choice, which choice was now giving up herself to another in a manner almost as scandalous as hers could be. but the glittering shoe of a great estate, and of fine things, which the deceived creature, that was now my deceiver, represented every hour to my imagination, hurried me away, and gave me no time to think of London, or of anything there, much less of the obligation I had to a person of infinitely more real merit than what was now before me. But the thing was done. I was now in the arms of my new spouse, who appeared still the same as before, great even to magnificence, and nothing less than number 1,000 a year could support the ordinary equipage he appeared in. After we had been married about a month, he began to talk of my going to Westchester in order to embark for Ireland. However, he did not hurry me, for we stayed near 3 weeks longer, and then he sent to Chester for a coach, to meet us at the Black Rock, as they call it, over against Liverpool. Thither we went in a fine boat they call a pinnace, with 6 oars, his servants, and horses, and baggage going in the ferry boat. He made his excuse to me, that he had no acquaintance in Chester, but he would go before, and get some handsome apartment for me at a private house. I asked him how long we should stay at Chester. He said, not at all, any longer than one night or two, but he would immediately hire a coach to go to Holyhead. Then I told him he should by no means give himself the trouble to get private lodgings for one night or two, for that Chester being a great place, I made no doubt, but there would be very good inns and accommodation enough. So we lodged at an inn in the West Street, not far from the cathedral. I forget what sign it was at. Here my spouse, talking of my going to Ireland, asked me if I had no affairs to settle at London, before we went off. I told him no, not of any great consequence, but what might be done as well by letter from Dublin. Madam, apostrophe says he, very respectfully, I suppose the greatest part of your estate, which my sister tells me is most of it in money in the Bank of England, lies secure enough, but in case it required transferring, or any way altering its property, it might be necessary to go up to London and settle those things, before we went over. Apostrophe, I seemed to look strange at it, and told him I knew not what he meant, that I had no effects in the Bank of England, that I knew of, and I hoped he could not say, that I had ever told him I had. No, he said, I had not told him so, but his sister had said the greatest part of my estate lay there. And I only mentioned it, me dear, apostrophe said he, that if there was any occasion to settle it, or order anything about it, we might not be obliged to the hazard, and trouble of another voyage back again. For he added, that he did not care to venture me too much upon the sea. I was surprised at this talk, and began to consider very seriously, what the meaning of it must be, and it presently occurred to me that my friend, who called him brother, had represented me in colors which were not my due, and I thought, since it was come to that pitch, that I would know the bottom of it, before I went out of England, and before I should put myself into I knew not whose hands in a strange country. Upon this I called his sister into my chamber the next morning, and letting her know the discourse her brother and I had been upon the evening before, I conjured her to tell me what she had said to him, and upon what foot it was that she had made this marriage. She owned that she had told him that I was a great fortune, and said that she was told so at London. Told so? Apostrophe apostrophe says I warmly, did I ever tell you so? Apostrophe no, she said, it was true I did not tell her so, but I had said several times, that what I had, was in my own disposal. I did so, apostrophe returned I very quickly and hastily, but I never told you I had anything called a fortune. No, not that I had number 100, or the value of number 100 in the world. Anyhow did it consist with my being a fortune, apostrophe said I, that I should come here into the north of England with you, only upon the account of living cheap? Apostrophe apostrophe at these words, which I spoke warm and high, my husband, her brother as she called him, came into the room, and I desired him to come and sit down, for I had something of moment to say before them both, which it was absolutely necessary he should hear. He looked a little disturbed at the assurance with which I seemed to speak it, and came and sat down by me, having first shut the door, upon which I began, for I was very much provoked, and turning myself to him, I am afraid, says I, my dear, for I spoke with kindness on his side, that you have a very great abuse put upon you, and an injury done you never, to be repaired in your marrying me, which, however, as I have had no hand in it, I desire I may be fairly acquitted of it, and that the blame may lie where it ought to lie, and nowhere else, for I wash my hands of every part of it. What injury can be done me, my dear, says he, in marrying you? I hope it is to my honor and advantage every way. I will soon explain it to you, says I, and I fear you will have no reason to think yourself well used. But I will convince you, my dear, says I again, that I have had no hand in it, and there I stopped a while. He looked now scared and wild, and began, I believe, to suspect what followed. However, looking towards me, and saying only, go on, he sat silent, as if to hear what I had more to say, so I went on. I asked you last night, said I, speaking to him, if ever I made any boast to you of my estate, or ever told you I had any estate in the Bank of England or anywhere else, and you owned I had not, as is most true. And I desire you will tell me here, before your sister, if ever I gave you any reason from me to think so, or that ever we had any discourse about it. And he owned again I had not, but said I had appeared always as a woman of fortune, and he depended on it, that I was so, and hoped he was not deceived. I am not inquiring, yet whether you have been deceived or not, said I. I fear you have, and I too. But I am clearing myself from the unjust charge of being concerned in deceiving you. I have been now asking your sister, if ever I told her of any fortune or estate I had, or gave her any particulars of it, and she owns I never did. Any pray, madam, said I, turning myself to her, be so just to me, before your brother, to charge me, if you can, if ever I pretended to you, that I had an estate. And why, if I had, should I come down into this country with you on purpose, to spare that little I had, and live cheap? She could not deny one word, but said she had been told in London, that I had a very great fortune, and that it lay in the Bank of England. And now, dear sir, said I, turning myself to my new spouse again, be so just to me, as to tell me who has abused both you and me, so much as to make you believe I was a fortune, and prompt you to court me to this marriage? He could not speak a word, but pointed to her, and, after some more pause, flew out in the most furious passion that ever I saw a man in my life, cursing her, and calling her all the whores and hard names he could think of, and that she had ruined him, declaring that she had told him I had number 15,000, and that she was to have number 500 of him for procuring this match for him. He then added, directing his speech to me, that she was none of his sister, but had been his whore for 2 years before, that she had had number 100 of him in part of this bargain, and that he was utterly undone, if things were as I said. And in his raving he swore he would. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.